Okay, so this evening wanted to talk about some precepts related things, and I thought I would start talking about. I'm going to do a series of three talks. I'm going to start talking about the first of the pure precepts, cease from evil. Or cease from that which causes harm. In our tradition, in the Soto Zen tradition, we take when you formally become a Buddhist, you take 16 precepts, and they start with the three refuges. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. And they go to the three pure precepts: do cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Or sometimes that third precept is translated as purify your own heart. And then they go to the 10 great precepts: do not kill, do not steal, do not covet, do not say that which is not true, do not sell the wine of delusion. Do not speak against others. Do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. Do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. Do not be angry, and do not defame the three treasures. In one sense, all of the 10 precepts are contained in the three pure precepts. And the three pure precepts are contained in the three refuges. They sort of telescope in and out, although they are useful to look at in terms of taking precepts and keeping precepts and using precepts to guide our lives. So, at this point, I wanted to zero in a little bit on those three pure precepts. So, as I say, cease from evil. In Buddhism, there is no sense of embodied evil. There's no like evil force out there, in contrast to the good force. That whole kind of dualistic battle between good and evil is pretty much a Western notion, originating wherever, but predominating in the Abrahamic religious traditions. So Buddhism doesn't view the world in that way. Buddhism looks at the world in a kind of radically different way than we look at it in the West. And even if we are not particularly religious and we come from a Western background, we're still pretty well steeped in that whole notion of good and evil, and that there's kind of evil in the world and good in the world. It's very hard to extract ourselves from that viewpoint. So in terms of the Dharma, had a conversation once with a friend of mine, and he was saying that one of our monastic teachers used to say that when you become a Buddhist, most people are either, if they come from a Catholic tradition, they're sort of Catholic Buddhists. If they come from a Protestant tradition, they're kind of Protestant Buddhists. If they come from a Jewish tradition, they're kind of Jewish Buddhists. And we kind of approach Buddhism from the perspective of our former perspective, even if we come from an atheistic background, we approach it from that way. As we practice Buddhism, I feel like for myself, I'm moving toward becoming a Buddhist. I'm trying to look at my views that were conditioned by my former experience and really examine those views and see whether they hold up in the light of the Dharma and the practice of the Dharma, and see where they condition my thinking about my life and my practice, really. I'm not trying to imply, in a sense, that there is a superiority about Buddhism as a perspective in the world. Just, I will overtly say, though, that there is a value in having only, in adhering to one perspective, the perspective of one tradition. If you have a whole bunch of different traditions mixed up in your perspective, then things get kind of confused. It's a bit, well, they get kind of confused. So I'm doing my best to follow the path of the Dharma, and over time I've been gradually working on making my views align with that. And that, in some sense, is how we ultimately come to find what the Buddha talked about, what the Buddha taught, what the Buddha pointed toward. So, with regard to good and evil, a better way to kind of think about that than the kind of notion of that there's kind of an inherent good in the world or an inherent evil in the world is that there is that which creates harm. There is that which perpetuates harm. There is that which is harmful. And in terms of ceasing from evil, that's what the Buddha is kind of looking at. That's what the Buddha is pointing toward. So we look at the precept. The precepts are, in a sense, a kind of lens that we can look at our lives from, and they are a kind of tool that we can use to restrain ourselves or look more clearly at our lives and help us to come to be in harmony with a fundamental reality, our inherent Buddha nature. I should say that it is the view of Buddhists that that inherent Buddha nature is good, is positive, and exists in all things. So that is a view of Buddhism that we can, in some sense, rely on, but in some sense also examine and come to understand and know for ourselves. An important characteristic of the Dharma is that thing, the thing the Buddha said, don't just believe it because I say it's true. Put it into practice and find out for yourself. So, right from the beginning, Buddhism is all about what can we do to practice, what can we do to implement the teaching and find out for ourselves what the Buddha was pointing at. The precepts are one of our main tools for putting the Dharma into practice. If I'm looking at my life, I'm saying, okay, where do I create suffering? Where do I create suffering for myself? Where do I create suffering for others? There's a practical thing there that I can work on, that I can come to know about, understand, and change. I can change those things about myself, or at least restrain them. I can change outcomes in that way. So evil is that which creates harm. Our kind of main teaching on the precepts is from the Kyoju Kaimon by Great Master Dogen. And he sort of articulated the precepts for our practice and our tradition. His commentary goes, cease from evil. This is the house of all the laws of Buddha. This is the source of all the laws of Buddha. So, in some sense, Buddhism begins with the notion of compassion, the notion of suffering. What is the Buddha had this question, what is suffering? Why is there suffering? And what can be done about it? What can I do about it? So right in the beginning of Buddhism is this notion of what is harm, what causes harm, what causes suffering, and how do I do something to change that? How do I change my behavior so that I can live in such a way as to not create harm, not create suffering? One of the things about this is that in some sense the Dharma is very much focused on what we as individuals do. It has very little concern about what groups of people do, what other people outside of us do. The main focus of what the Buddha taught was, what can we do with our minds? Now, that can seem sort of self-absorbed and all of that, but that's not, in fact, the ultimate outcome of practice. Being selfishly absorbed is not the ultimate outcome. Because when we look at ourselves, we have to say, well, how am I creating harm relative to others? And if I change my behavior so that I'm not creating harm, then that has a great impact on those around me. If I look at my life and I cease from evil, then that has an automatic effect on those around me. I've told this story before, you probably all heard it, I apologize, but it's very illustrative. A friend of the order was practicing with us, was a lay minister, and he, there was some misunderstanding, he got upset about something, and he decided, I'm not going to practice anymore, I'm going to stop. This was a person who had been pretty well invested in practice for some time, and so he did. He stopped practicing, he set it aside, and he related this story to other people in the order later on. He said, at a certain point, my coworkers came to me and said to me, we don't know what you were doing before, but we would like it if you started again. It helped us. And so he had to kind of wake up from that and started practicing again, cleared up the problem that he had, and came back and related that story to members of our training community. We take on, in one sense, the Buddha is very practical in the world, saying, suffering exists, what can we really do about it? If you've ever tried to change anything in the world outside of yourself, you'll know that you have very limited success. We have very limited amount of control over the world, and the more we try to get control, the less we do. And if we change something, oftentimes we do a thing that seems good at a particular time, and then sometime down the road we discover that it was actually led to a disaster. I'm not trying to say people shouldn't do anything in an external state, but where we really have control, where we really have input in the world, is what we do in our own minds, is how we live our own life. And that can have a profound effect. So, again, an example of that is the Buddha himself. He was a wealthy prince. He set aside that worldly power. He set aside his relationship and family life. And he set out on the solitary path of spiritual inquiry, and awakened to the truth, trained himself, trained his mind, and awakened to the truth. And from that awakening was able to pass on the Dharma. And here we are, 2,500 years later, after uncounted generations of people practicing before us, and we can still hear the Dharma today. And all of the Dharma comes out of the Buddha's, comes out of this very thing, the house of the Buddha. The Buddha starts with ceasing from evil. He starts with looking at his own mind. He trains his own mind. So, again, our emphasis on what we're doing as individuals is not, its intention is not self-absorption. Its intention has a profound and practical reality to it. We work on ourselves, and that has the effect of benefiting those around us. So we start with cease from evil. I think that's pretty much what I have to say at this point this evening. Would anybody, does anybody have anything they would like to add or ask about or whatever? On this or any other topic.
Could you, I'm thinking of the fourth law of Buddhism. Could you say something about that in reference to what you were talking about?
So, Four Noble Truths?
The without...
Fail, evil is vanquished, and good prevails. That refers to a teaching called the Five Laws of the Universe, and that was kind of a teaching unique to Master Jiu Kennett. Although that principle, without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails, is embedded within the Dharma. In one sense, we look around the world, there's this question of why evil happens, why suffering happens. And we look around the world and you kind of think, you know, this place is kind of awful. And in a way, it's true. There's this notion in the Western world, if there's a God, how come he created such an evil world? How come he created evil? Why isn't it a nicer place to live? And that's a somewhat nonsensical question from the point of view of Buddhism. A more practical kind of way of looking at the world is from a spiritual perspective, the world is here for us to learn how to not suffer. And we receive the consequences of actions. Everyone receives the consequences of actions. So it may be, and I'm not, it's said that only a Buddha can really penetrate the lines of causality. It may be that, I mean, you can kind of think, I was talking to someone the other day who was suffering intensely many years later after some childhood trauma. And you can kind of think, well, why did that happen? Is there some kind of karmic reason for that to happen? Maybe there is, maybe there's not. That sort of thing happens in this world. That's the practical reality of it. And from a spiritual perspective, we can take on the purpose of learning how to learn from that suffering and transcend it. And that can become the purpose of our life. I would never want to sit in a place where I could say, so-and-so's misfortune is the result of some past evil action. That's not a place for me to sit or judge. I know that from my own perspective and my own life, I know that there are consequences which I have experienced, which I'm quite certain are the result of past mistakes that I have made. I know that that is true for me. Whether they're, well, anyway, just there are mistakes that I have made and I receive the consequences for them. And I have to recognize that that process is going on. And when I can accept that my consequences, that the consequences of my former mistakes are the consequences of my former mistakes, I can learn from them and learn how to not repeat them. And in that sense, evil is vanquished and good prevails. I can prove that true for myself. And I have seen it happen enough for other people to know that that is at least a possibility for other people in the world. For us to accept the situation that we're in, see it as consequence, whether it's some personal consequence or just the consequence of being born and living in 21st century, the Western world of 21st century, whatever it is. Whether it's the consequence of, there was a tsunami that happened in, around Thailand, Indonesia, there, a number of years ago. And there was a panel of religious people talking about this tsunami, and there's a Christian and a Muslim, and they're talking about how, well, this is part of God's plan or whatever. And there was a Buddhist monk there, and he's like, well, this is just the sort of world in which things like that happen. We live in a spinning ball of molten lava, with a kind of thin crust on the top, and it's pretty unstable. And so when that crust lurches in some way, it releases seismic waves and they cause floods. It's not like, it doesn't need a god to do that. It's just the consequence of living on an unstable ball of, there's a thermonuclear reaction going on in the center of the earth. And we're flying through space at several thousand miles an hour. It's no wonder that every now and then disasters happen. But so that's one of the possible consequences for actions. There is great suffering in the world, and it's a cause for great grief. But there's also the possibility for suffering to be transcended, to be learned from. And when I look out in the world, I see that opportunity. I recognize that people, I was talking to a gentleman recently, and again, he was quite upset about this past suffering. He was unable to step outside of it. And it may be that he won't ever be able to step outside of it. And I see that, and I understand and accept that. But I also know from my own experience that it is possible to step outside of that, that it is possible for that evil to be vanquished and good to prevail. So in some sense, that's how I think about it now. More, yes, in some way, I believe that that is the general direction of things, and there have been various kind of studies about history and how we've actually improved in terms of violence and that sort of thing. But in some way, that's not really, I do feel that that's true, but it's not really my essential business. My essential business is looking at the suffering that I have and working on that. And when I do that, then it changes my perspective about the world and the possibility for others. And I have to I know that one of the ways that I can help the world is to by training myself to be kind and accept that people may not be able to transcend their suffering at the particular moment that I encounter them. Does that make sense? Make sense? It is, in some ways, a kind of unsatisfactory thing if you have the desire to take away the world's suffering. And in some sense, that is compassion. But we come to understand the reality of compassion when we really dig into working on why we suffer. And then we understand the complexity and difficulty that other people face, but also we become skilled, more skilled in our ability to work with other people, if that makes sense. So, one of the things River Master Jiu taught was that we would never become gods. We will never become anything other than human beings. And we cannot place ourselves in the position of God, like, I know what is best for others. I know that it would be X, Y, or Z course of action would be good to take. We can only be human beings and do what we can as human beings. And one of the things we can do as human beings is grapple with the evil within ourselves, that which creates suffering in ourselves, that which creates suffering for ourselves and for others within ourselves. And that's what the Buddha really focused on. And when we do that, it has a profound effect. Anything else?
That was the best explanation for me ever on this last.
Oh, yeah. Evil is it. Yeah. Oh. Thank you.
I'm curious if can trees commit evil acts?
I have never heard of such a thing. At least not in the sense of having the intention to cause harm or the intention to cause difficulty. Certainly, it would be possible for a tree to hurt some other being. I mean, when the tree falls over, it's going to smash something.
But it was just the conditions that made it so, right? Not the tree doing anything.
Most likely, yeah. Yeah, I don't think... We don't normally think of trees as being sentient in the normal, in the usual way, like human beings are, so...
Right.
But I'm not wise enough to get into the mind of a tree and see what its intention is. A lot of what comes out, what turns out to be harmful, has to do with what our intention is. Whether we have the intention, not necessarily just to hurt another or hurt ourselves, but if we have an intention that is somehow distorted by greed, hatred, and delusion, then likely as not, we will do an act which creates harm or creates suffering. And trees, so far as I understand it, don't find it necessary in some sense to form that kind of intention. They just live in their way.
Might the same thing be true of a tiger?
It might be, in terms of the spectrum of things, it is more possible for animals to have this enough of the kind of sentience that we're talking about to form intention, to form greed and misunderstanding, desire, anger, misunderstanding, ignorance.
That exists in animals, but maybe not in the plant kingdom.
Yeah.
I was reading Dogen Shobogenzo, and he said, it's not that there are no evils, it's just that there are things that we should not do. It's not that there are evils, it's just that there are things we should not do.
That's right.
And then he goes on to, he says, for instance, the spring pine, or it's not that the spring pine exists or does not exist, it is simply a thing that we do not invent. So it exists on its own. So evil exists on its own. It exists. Correct?
Evil in the sense of suffering, harm, exists.
Yes.
In a sense. But remember, he said, it's not that the spring pine either exists or doesn't exist. It's something that we don't have to invent. The whole question of existence and non-existence is a thing we don't have to really grapple with.
It's like not really the question to be asking.
Right. It's in some sense just looking at the consequences of our actions. And those will give us clues about what we should do or shouldn't do, to use those terms. And those, I might actually say it differently, I might say those things which are to be done and those things which are not to be done.
Yeah.
And when we can look at it in that way, sometimes when we do things which are not to be done, we create harm. And so it often the harm or the consequences that we feel are evidence of having done that which is not to be done. And so we can then work on not doing that which is not to be done. And this may seem a bit esoteric, but it's how we approach keeping the precepts from a non-dualistic point of view, from without going into the mind of dualism. A thing is good or it's bad. And so we do it because it's good, or we don't do it because it's bad, like that. It is more, well, what is the real consequence of this? And refrain from doing it. Because it is not to be done. And so we don't have to create a whole dualistic framework about why we're doing it or not doing it. The precepts are a teaching that we can adopt before we have trained our minds to that subtlety of duality. So we adopt the precepts quite early in our practice, and by looking at the precepts from the point of view of practice and looking at the precepts from the point of view of studying our own cause and effect, we enter into, we have a greater ability to enter into the subtlety of non-duality. So keeping the precepts in however coarse a way you do it or for whatever reason you do it is the beginning of the entryway into knowing what is to be done and what is not to be done. Does that make sense? Because in some sense, that's a little bit too slippery for most of us. But working on the precepts is quite concrete. If we're doing our sitting and working on the precepts, we will eventually come to a place where we recognize what Dogen is talking about. in a kind of profound way, in terms of that we can see that it's practical and not just esoteric. Does that make some sense? Yeah.
If harm is defined as something that follows from greed, hate, and delusion, those of us who have not reached enlightenment yet, it's like every act, and breathing, getting in my car and driving here, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any evidence of that being harmful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in the sense of your personal experience?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What evidence?
Well, from what I understand, my car burns gasoline. Gasoline gives off CO2. CO2 goes in the atmosphere. And as a result, we have a climate problem.
That's an interesting point and a good question. That is a harm that is actually a different thing than the harm that we're talking about in terms of precepts. That is a consequence of physical action and in some sense doesn't have necessarily a moral component to it. Although in today's modern world, we put a moral component on it. All of the carbon dioxide that exists in oil, in fossil fuels, was at some point free in the world. It was just absorbed by plants and captured by plants.
Could we choose to, between a gas guzzler and a hybrid, though? I mean, wouldn't buying a hybrid, if we could, be more ethical?
It would probably be more ethical.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't necessarily be more preceptual. And there is actually a difference between ethics and precepts. There is actually a difference between the suffering that we create on a preceptual level than there is on an ethical level. I'm not saying we shouldn't be ethical. I'm definitely not. I mean, I drive a Prius. I'm trying my best to not put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. There is a pretty good imperative for kind of limiting global warming, but that imperative really has to do with how comfortable we are as human beings. I have to say, I mean, it doesn't, the Earth, you know, there's this kind of thing, we're going to save the Earth. Well, the Earth has been through all manner of awful things just by being that kind of molten ball of rock that's spinning through space. The Earth will kind of take care of itself in a certain way. After human beings are gone, the Earth will just kind of carry on and do what it does. Again, I'm not arguing that we should or shouldn't be ethical in this way, but it is actually different than the precepts, than keeping the precepts. There could be a preceptual component to it, and we need to look at that. Do you see what I'm... Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Not yet.
See if I can.
Well, I mean, you know... Okay, there's the difference between the ethics and the precepts. Well, if the precepts are phrased in terms of how can I avoid, you know, bad consequences, well, I can refrain from, you know, 1 through 10.
Yeah.
All right. And then I suppose the ethical component would be, in a dualistic nature, is it good?
The ethics has more to do with what we agree on as human beings to act upon, what the behavior that we agree on as human beings and how to act.
Okay.
But precepts arise from a more organic level of consequence. When I act on greed, the desire to have something, it affects my mind. It affects those around me.
Then the difference is, I mean, the way that I see the difference is that if I choose to act on greed, okay, I will use the term, that's kind of on a gross level, you're going to have some issues. So it's like a degree. Whereas me getting my car, which is also a Prius, and driving, well, you know, I suppose I could say I'm greedy because I want to spend less on gas or because I want to get here tonight.
Well, the question we have to...
But that's less.
It is much less. And looking at the precepts is often it has a much more subtle effect on us and those around us than what we might say that coarse level of action is.
Okay, that's fine.
So if you heard that I was making cookies and I was going to provide cookies tonight, and you really wanted to have those cookies, but your daughter had some issue at home that you really had ought to deal with, and you let your greed for the cookies distort your decision for coming across the river and visiting us, something would have happened. If you let that greed distort your perspective, then you will create a kind of suffering.
Oh yeah, well, but that's what I mean by kind of on a gross level.
And that's the level of the precepts that we're looking at.
Okay.
One of the challenges of living in the world, and the Buddha explicitly said that this was true, is that the precepts in some sense break down eventually. We have to eat, for instance. If we're going to live, we will be creating a certain level of coarse suffering. And what we're trying to do with regard to the precepts is really dig in and let go of greed, hate, and delusion to the greatest degree that we can. And to a certain extent, that means accepting that we're going to be causing some consequence by living in the world. Accepting that we're going to pollute things. We're going to, cut somebody off in traffic sometimes. We're going to, so I talked to somebody who was in intense suffering. He ended up getting quite angry with me and leaving the temple. You know, he was just quite angry. I couldn't get him to stop. And that was, I have to take responsibility. I wasn't skillful enough to work with him in a way that could help him to transcend his issue.
So is it just the degree of intention that makes a difference?
Degree of intention between what
the
and
what? The ethics and the precepts.
I think that it has more to do with where they come from. The ethics are, again, more of a social convention. The precepts arise from the study of organic cause and effect on a moral level in individual human beings. So it is, the precepts are in some way closer to our actual mind. And ethics, again, I'm not trying to say we shouldn't be ethical, but they have a level of social contract about them. They come from a kind of a social agreement.
I have one maybe example that comes to mind, recycling. So in a way that could be kind of a social concept, but at the same time I could see it mixed with morality in a way, you know, like if you could be greedy and impatient and just throw it away, or you could take the time to recycle it.
Yes.
And in a way that seems like you could be following the precepts.
Yes.
And also a social convention.
Right. The thing that I want to make clear, though, is that if we elevate something like recycling or the kind of car that you drive, or even the language that you use when you're dealing with someone else, to the level of precepts, then we really bind ourselves to, we're really binding ourselves to a particular social context. And we tend to miss a whole kind of level of subtlety in life. I can imagine a situation where, well, I've been in situations where there was just no way I could afford to buy a kind of fuel-efficient car. And so in order to live my life, I needed to, you know, produce more carbon monoxide than I, you know, or even carbon dioxide than I would like to produce, if you see what I'm saying. And so when we, and I can imagine myself being in a situation, well, in Montana, I have friends live in Montana and Idaho, northern Idaho. And I'll go and visit them and I'll say, well, do we recycle this glass? And they're like, oh. And we've had this conversation enough, I should know by now. No, we can't recycle glass here in Montana, in like Whitefish, Montana, because it's too expensive. Nobody wants to collect the glass and ship it to a place where it can be recycled. It's too expensive. It just doesn't work. So they end up throwing glass into a landfill. If you elevate something like recycling to the level of the precepts as an inherent thing, then you're basically saying all those people in Montana who don't recycle glass are breaking the precepts. See what I'm getting at here? You're binding people to a particular social convention and kind of giving it the weight of morality. And it really doesn't have that. It's just, well, sure, it's good if you can recycle glass. I have no, I'm 100% behind it. But I don't want to look at it as if it were on the level of precepts, because it becomes an unrealistic and untenable thing for everybody to follow. But working on ceasing from evil in terms of our minds, in terms of the subtle harm that we cause ourselves and others, is another matter. We can all do that. And it's not that we're not talking about social relativism in terms of ceasing from evil. There is, and still, there could be actions that could be harmful in one context and not harmful in another context. So when we try to nail it down too closely, we get into some problems. We get into some problems of judgmentalism, and we create suffering in another way. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm. What comes to mind is like eating meat. Everything you mentioned.
Right.
And I think I mentioned this something. Well, you know, the precepts don't say do not eat meat. It's just do not, you know.
Yep.
Do not try to create harm.
Right.
So if you're at the 12,000 foot level of Tibet, and you know, that's what you have to eat.
Yeah.
Well, they're not breaking the precepts.
Yeah.
They're doing the least amount of harm. I'm trying to, I don't need to eat meat.
Right.
To live. I got plenty of other things.
Right.
So in trying to do the least amount of harm, I will, you know, do that as far as my own training.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say,
right,
well, it says do not kill, do not this, do not that, but...
Yes. Yeah, and different context. I mean, I'm a monk. I live in a context where it's required that I don't eat meat. If I want to be a monk, I'm required to not eat meat. That's one of our rules. Now, that said, there are monks who get a dispensation from that and eat meat because of health reasons. And so we're not, again, looking at that as a precept per se, although the impulse to not eat meat can arise from our attempts, as Gary's kind of pointing out, our attempts to do as little harm as possible. So I can look in my mind and I can say, for me, it would be counter-perceptual for me to eat meat. Although I don't think I would say that. I've been a vegetarian longer than I've been a Buddhist, for whatever that's worth. So it is important for me personally to not eat meat. There was a period where I had to kind of really look into how militantly I held that, and how what I think about others who eat meat, for instance. And, you know, if I'm engaging, if I'm all virtuous and not eating meat myself, but then I'm engaging in all kinds of judgmental thinking about my neighbors who eat meat, there's an evil that I'm creating. I'm creating harm if I'm being all judgmental and creating a dualism about other people. So I have to be quite careful about these things. Yeah. Anything else? Have I left anybody vexed or anything like that? No. Okay, well, thank you all very much. It's really good to spend a little time with you all.